and welcome to Spirit of Film Conversations. I'm your host, Randall Libero. We broadcast each week on the premier channel for transformational talk radio on the Internet, Seventh Wave Network, online at SeventhWaveNetwork.com. Movies are changing the way we think, live, and dream. So each week, we showcase today's top independent and visionary filmmakers whose movies evoke what I call the spirit of film, which is a metaphor for the movie's magical power to transform our lives. This week, we continue our series of programs into the process of writing for films with a look at the movie Peaceful Warrior, released by Lionsgate Entertainment in the spring of 2006. We have with us in the first half of this program author Dan Millman, whose international best-selling novel, Way of the Peaceful Warrior, was the basis for the movie. In the second half of today's show, we'll be talking with screenwriter Kevin Bernhardt. Peaceful Warrior tells the story of a talented college gymnast with Olympic dreams who meets a mysterious stranger he calls Socrates, who holds the power to tap into new worlds of strength and understanding. It's an extraordinary film that speaks to the strength and resiliency of the human spirit and presents profound transcendental concepts in an easy-to-understand manner. The film has won the grand prize at several film festivals and garnered high praise from some appreciative reviewers, but other critics of the film have been less than kind. Yet Peaceful Warrior has been a hit with audiences and has even received a great deal of praise from such renowned personalities as Sting, Jim Carrey, and Tony Robbins. So stay tuned for a behind-the-scenes look at how a very visionary story was turned into a mainstream motion picture. Well, we're here in the studio with Dan Millman. Hi, welcome, Dan.
Thank you, Randall.
It's a pleasure to have you here with us. When did this actually get started with the road to the Peaceful Warrior book becoming a film?
Well, like many journeys, it was a long one. I think it was 1987 that an aspiring producer named David Welch, who was an actor and a stuntman, actually, and a friend, an old trampoline buddy, had contacted me and said I'd like to option the rights to the movie. And at the same time, Columbia Pictures had made an offer, and I turned them down. It just didn't seem like the right time and place, and I didn't think they really got it at the time. So anyway, I said yes to David, and he optioned the film, and it took him many, many years, and there were ups and downs working on the script. We did 10 or 15 drafts of it. I worked on it for quite some time, and then it was near 2000 that he found a small studio named Sobini Films, headed by Mark Amin, who said, we'd like to do this, because the book meant a lot to the head of the studio personally, which is a big plus. He'd read it years before. And then finally, they just did the whole thing. When you develop a film, you got to get the right script, and then you finally get the casting and put all the elements together. And it was overall probably almost a 20-year journey.
Wow, that's it's quite a long time for a book to become a movie, as popular as this book has been over the years. Now, you've written quite a number of other books. This was not, for people who don't know, The Way of the Peaceful Warrior is actually the first book in a series of books on the subject of the character of Socrates. Can you tell us a little bit about the other books that you've written about this story?
Right. I need to jump back a bit before that. When I was a young gymnast at the University of California, Berkeley, many years ago, I discovered a calling for teaching. I love to share what I learned with other people because no matter what, how much I improved myself, only one person benefited. So I started to share what I could and talked about talent for sports, how to develop talent. When I was coaching at Stanford University, I started working with that idea of talent and developing that foundation of strength and flexibility and coordination to help athletes learn faster and easier and so on. But my interest expanded over time into developing talent, not for sports so much, but talent for living, for facing the everyday challenges we all have in relationships and finances and career decisions and all those challenges. So, and meeting adversity, how do you deal with adversity and change and so on? So I traveled around the world, met many different teachers, many different experiences, and was quite intensely involved. It was the center of my life for quite some time. And that resulted in an urge to share what I learned in a way that people might relate to on a visceral level, not just intellectually, at a heart level, you know, guts and the whole thing. So I... on a structure of my life, based on my college years as a young man, And I decided I'd relate the incidents around an unusual meeting with an old man I met in a gas station about 3 in the morning in Berkeley, California, in my senior year in college. And that became, after over a 10-year period, it took shape, my first book, Way of the Peaceful Warrior, where I meet this old guy in a gas station. He wouldn't tell me his real name, but he reminded me intensely of this old Greek sage. So I ended up calling him Socrates. And Peaceful Warrior told my adventures with him. And it was only 10 years later I wrote a book called Sacred Journey of the Peaceful Warrior, which really takes place within the first story, about a woman teacher I meet, a huna, a healer, in Hawaii. And finally, 25 years after that, after my first book was written, I wrote The Journeys of Socrates in response to questions from readers who wanted to know more about this old guy, and I told his life story in The Journeys of Socrates. So those three books currently are kind of the narrative form of the Peaceful Warrior saga. But in addition, I've written a number of nonfiction books, very different purpose, very different content. Titles like The Life You Were Born to Live, No Ordinary Moments, Living on Purpose, Everyday Enlightenment. Those give kind of a flavor for the genre in which I write.
Well, if anyone's interested to, while they're listening to the program and going to Dan's website, it's at peacefulwarrior.com. Can you kind of give an idea of what you feel the film was successful in conveying about the messages in your work?
Well, the book is a reflection of my life, and the character Dan Millman in the book is quite similar to, but not the exact same person you're speaking with now. So the book reflected elements from my life, certainly, and in the same sense, one step beyond that, the movie reflected elements in the book, and there were actually elements from my life that made it all the way through to the movie that are quite depicted quite accurately. For example, there was a pretty serious motorcycle crash that I experienced in real life, and they depicted it with chilling accuracy in the movie. But I do describe it in some detail in the book as well. And it's one of those things that represent adversity in all our lives, whether we suffer loss, disappointment, challenges for health, finances, and other kinds of adversities. It's how we respond to those things that really is going to make a difference. I've never seen an adversity that doesn't at least make us a bit stronger, wiser, and maybe even more compassionate. So I guess that shattered leg I suffered kind of represents adversity we all face. That's why so many people related to the story. And in the film, well, there are elements in the film that don't reflect my life. I sometimes joke with people, and you know, Scott Meklowitz, who plays my role in the movie, his love life in the film is a bit more active than mine was in college. So there are some dramatic interpretations, but overall, the film conveys not only elements of my life, but also some universal lessons, as you point out, that speak to us all. One of the major ones is about bringing our attention back to the present, because it's the moment of reality. The rest is imagination and memory. The past and future are nice places to visit, but we don't want to live there.
A lot of the film was built around that concept. It's even in the tagline for the film about being in the present moment.
Yeah, and also no ordinary moments. That's right. That's an object lesson in the book. And that also happens in the movie, to finally bring the character and remind the viewer or the reader of the book that we think some moments are special and other moments are ordinary, but we finally realize there are no ordinary moments. And if we just pay attention, really look around and pay attention to what's going on with all our senses, every moment has this kind of amazing quality to it. But often our attention is trapped because we're muttering to ourselves, what am I going to do about my relationship, about my finances, about my, you know, my job, and so on. And these decisions we're going through, so often we look at life through kind of a filter, a haze, a gauze, curtain, and we lose that direct, intense, passionate relationship to life. And so by coming back to the present and refocusing, in certain ways, I can't go into in the context of this interview, we start to reawaken that sense of intensity we had as a child, where everything becomes interesting.
You probably don't remember, but I was actually at one of your bookstore events many years ago, back in the early 1980s.
Ah, wow.
And actually, there was an exercise, a physical exercise, a movement that you taught back then, where you're alternating your foot and your arm raising in the air and you're breathing.
Yeah, the Peaceful Warrior Workout.
Right, and yeah. I still use that today.
How great.
It's a very useful move. So besides being a wonderful philosopher, you're also very practical in teaching people body movement. Can you? And of course, in the film, being a gymnast, the character goes through a lot of that transformation himself of relearning how to use his body. So can you talk a little bit about the aspect of physical conditioning as well as mental conditioning and how the two integrate?
Well, it's an interesting question, Randall, because I know I have many friends who also teach. You know, there are other authors in this particular personal growth genre, and they come from a different background, and it's very intellectual. And again, I went to school. You know, I was graduated from Berkeley. I've done some academic work. I understand empiricism. But because of my background as an athlete, I go for more practical, grounded. You know, I remind people it's fine to have our head in the clouds, but we have to have our feet on the ground as well. So I think my background as an athlete keeps my work practical, realistic, accessible. It's like, what can I do with this? How can I apply this to everyday life? Rather than just interesting ideas we can think about and go, well, that's fascinating. But, you know, it's like, how do we translate that into acting a little kinder in everyday life, opening up in our relationships, finding a focus, a certain focus, and those kinds of elements. That's what the Peaceful Warrior's Way is about. It's a focus not so much on fixing our insides and thinking about thinking, but it's about focusing on what we do and practicing life, not just doing it, not just eating and sleeping and doing all that, but practicing eating, practicing everything we do with an attention to refinement, and it brings us back to this moment. So it's really not very complicated. But the remembering of it, that's the key. See, all I can do in all my work is I remind people of what they already know at deeper levels but might have forgotten.
That's something to be studied for all of us.
Sure.
Now, since this is a movie, I want to talk a little bit about communicating messages through the media. Kind of take it back and start with the idea of the written word or the spoken word. What role do you feel that stories and dreams and personal journeys play in today's world?
Well, story has always been really an underappreciated element of our lives. I mean, there's an old proverb that goes something like, God invented men and women because God loves stories. We're all a story in the making. Each one of us is a story. We never know what the next chapter is going to be. So stories and dreams do play a role, whether we fully acknowledge it in our busy day-to-day life or not. Life is a narrative. This happens and this happens because of that. That happens. And coincidences come up and twists and turns. So our lives are a story, and I think it's key. And the film medium is the number one art today, and for good reason, because, you know, nobody's smarter than all of us. And to make a motion picture, it not only takes millions of dollars, or hundreds of thousands even for a small independent feature, but it takes the creative arts of people who build sets and directors and writers. Beginning filmmakers try to do all that themselves. But there are experts in their field with years of experience. So all those people coming together to create this thing up on the screen from an hour and a half to 3 hours, with actors dedicating their talents and people who put years of their life into it, it's like writing a book. But there's something very powerful to the subconscious to see those images up there on the screen. Now, I know a number of authors who get a little grumpy about seeing their books adapted to the screen, which, in my view personally, is a little understandable but a bit petulant, because it is so rare to have a book made into a film in the first place, to have people wanting to invest all their time and money into one's book to make it on the screen. I think every author can be grateful that just gets up there, and I am. I'm very grateful to the producers, director, and all those who helped make this into a movie. But adapting a book to the screen is like turning a painting into a sculpture or into a cabinet. Changes have to be made. And I went in knowing that. It's an adaptation. You try to keep the elements, the spirit of the source material, which I think they did. It's kind of ironic that even though the movie only covers the first two-thirds of the book, you know, it doesn't cover a death and rebirth and a lot of very dramatic things that happen in the book, they said it would work better for the film medium, for the first film, to concentrate on Dan's college years. So that's what they do. And nonetheless, I think the movie managed to convey a lot of the spirit and lessons, some of the core lessons conveyed in the book as well.
Well, definitely room for a sequel.
Well, it's possible.
Possibly. You never know. I also want to talk with you about this new wave of interest in more meaningful and even spiritually relevant entertainment that has been steadily increasing in recent years. Now, audiences are seeking it, even though sort of it is not always easy to define.
Right.
And it has a lot of different names. I mean, on your website, you mentioned it's personal growth cinema. I prefer to call it visionary entertainment. People are looking to see films that talk about personal and social change and even spiritual transformation. One of the things that your film is a wonderful example of that. Do you feel that Hollywood is kind of starting to get the message that these films, that there's an audience for these films of subjects like this?
Yes and no. I think the times are changing radically, not to mention even spiritual films, just the delivery method of films. Theaters are just hanging in there in terms of having people go to the theater when more people are getting big screen TVs and sound surround sound systems, and DVDs are available sooner. But I believe it's still, there's a real value in the communal experience of people gathering together. That's why they go to sports events and see the Olympics in person rather than watching it clearly on TV. That group experience, there's something to say for that, and getting out of the house. But in terms of spiritual films and whether Hollywood's listening, well, you know, it started a while ago. I mean, first of all, even the term spiritual is a very tricky term. It means different things to different people. To me, spiritual is about what inspires us, what calls it, what uplifts us. And there have been, since the beginning of movies, there have been films that uplift us that have a lot of spirit to them, that inspire us, that really we wouldn't call a spiritual movie. I once asked my little daughter, what books do you consider spiritual? And she named some books, and none of them have metaphysical themes about angels or anything like that, but they inspired her. And there have been mainstream movies that have done very well, like Field of Dreams. There was one called Resurrection, an old movie with Ellen Burstyn, about a healer. There's What Dreams May Come, Ghost, Phenomena.
Well, even the blockbuster movies like Lord of the Rings and Star Wars and Harry Potter, they're all laced with mystical teachings.
And have magical elements, exactly. And we don't call them just spiritual cinema. But more recently, there have been films that are message films, very heavily laden on message, based on some books. You could use some, like The Celestine Prophecy and The Conversations with God, of course, What the Bleep. And there have been other films as well. There was a film called One, I think.
One, the movie, and The Secret, which is becoming very popular right now, which was originally released on the Internet. I interviewed the producers a few weeks ago.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it is definitely, there's a growing number of film artists also who are intentionally weaving spiritual principles into their film stories.
They are, and I think this has to be skillfully done. My personal view, and I say this objectively, I want listeners to know I'm not financially connected with the movie, except if it's nice for any author because people may want to go buy the book. I mean, that's a realistic, you know, author's wish when a movie comes out based on a book. However, I'm supportive of this film because I think they did a good job. I also think the film is going to do some good in the world. I think it's going to serve a useful purpose for people who might not even read the book, to remind them of some of these core principles of life. So they'll leave the movie theater not just saying, that was a cool film, but, wow, you know, I think I got some things that are going to stay with me. I won't forget about this by the time I get to my car or get to my front door. This movie is going to stay with me. And I know many people have seen it more than once because they really love going back and having an experience. Not all spiritual films, among the recent ones, really are that strong. I think Peaceful Warrior sets the bar for a real mainstream film that has strong spiritual lessons about bigger picture of life, whereas some of the other films have nice messages, but they just, I don't think, work quite as well as an engrossing movie.
Well, I think audiences really kind of identify with the characters in the movie. I mean, they're portrayed in a way that you really like them. So
yeah.
I think it's a little bit easier for people to kind of grasp Dan's experience in the movie and the other characters, and really feel, because it's very much like, it's a very modern movie in the way that it's put together.
Yeah.
Yeah, it feels very modern. So I think it is, as you say, I think it definitely is setting the bar for for Hollywood, at least hopefully that they'll go far beyond that. And we're definitely seeing some films here coming up in the near future that that may just do that. But now you had mentioned to me that you think the film might go back into a wider release possibly at some point. Is there some indication that you know that this may happen?
I have a good feeling about it. I think so people can keep their eyes open. Anybody who's on my email list, for example, is going to definitely know as soon as I know what's going on with the film. Also, if somebody goes to peacefulwarrior.com, they can click right on the homepage and see the movie trailer if they haven't already done so. It gives a good flavor for the film. And Scott Meklowitz, again, who played my role, Scott did such a wonderful job of playing a self-absorbed, arrogant young gymnast and still remain likable and vulnerable. And I thought he accomplished that wonderfully.
Yeah, and I thought Nick Nolte did a terrific job. I think it's one of his best roles as well.
Oh, Nick was wonderful. He was the perfect casting because he's a weathered mountain of a man, and nothing sounds preachy out of his mouth. He was able to really convey that with a lot of heart, the lessons. I think his performance, I think it's one of the best he's ever done.
I just wanted to kind of give people an indicator as far as some of the things that by studying your work and the principles and the teachings that you have available, that might be seeing the film and coming to your site for the first time and wanting to learn more, what would be something that you would kind of want to relate to them initially?
Well, the first thing I'd say is I am not here for people to trust me. I'm not coming across as an authority and expert for people who want to follow somebody. I'm not about that. I'm here to help people trust themselves. The other thing I'd like to convey that's really central to what I do is I want to acknowledge there's nothing new under the sun. And that was said by an ancient Greek, millennia ago, thousands of years ago. All the wisdom has been written by the ancient Greeks, Lao Tzu, Chuang Tzu, Epictetus, the transcendentalist writers. The wisdom is all around us. We all have access to it. But each new generation benefits from new voices, fresh voices that communicate in clear language that makes sense to modern men and women. So that's my job. I'm one of those voices. Certainly there are other fine writers and so on, but people seem to gravitate toward my work who've read it because it makes sense. It's common sense. It's not way out there stuff. It's about living with a peaceful heart but a warrior spirit. So that element of balance is very important. That's why I call it the peaceful warrior's approach to living. Courage and love both.
Courage and love both. So that's how you would define a peaceful warrior.
Yep, peaceful heart, warrior spirit. And there are times we could use both.
All right, that's a wonderful thought to hold on to. Now, I just want to ask you one more thing about some of your plans for next year. You're out on the road quite a bit and talking with people.
I do travel.
Where are you going to be appearing in the next 5 or 6 months or so?
Yeah, actually, this year I'm now working on a new book, so kind of winding down from the travels and wishing everybody good holidays. Next year, if anybody goes to my website and sees the event schedule, I'll be just giving a talk down in Santa Barbara. I'll be in Lenox, Massachusetts at Kripalu. It's a wonderful center there, teaching a weekend workshop. I'll be doing a week-long, amazing, my fourth time there, eco-adventure down in Costa Rica.
Eco-adventure?
Yeah, well, it's an ecologically-minded place down in Costa Rica. They don't have a military. They're very, very environmental-friendly. And we're going to be at this beautiful spa. It's like Shangri-La, really. It's Pura Vida. That means pure life. Pura Vida Spa down in Costa Rica. So I'm going to have a good group of people joining me down there in February to recharge their batteries because it's like 72 degrees, perfect weather down there in February. And then I'll be in Joshua Tree down in Southern California, then up in Vancouver, British Columbia. In fact, in May, I'm going to be traveling to a number of different cities in Europe, UK and Holland and elsewhere, quite a few places, Switzerland. So people are going to, again, check the web schedule, the website. And I just love to meet new people and reach out. So I've always been a teacher at heart, and I only learned something about the craft of writing and speaking in order to convey and share what I've learned that I think is going to be useful and helpful to people.
Okay, well, Dan, I really appreciate your time today hanging out with us on Spirit of Film. And, of course, again, we'll give your website. It's peacefulwarrior.com for anyone who wants more information about the movie, the book, Dan's work, his appearances, lecture schedule, everything like that. You can find it right on that website. So, Dan, thanks so much. I really, really appreciate your time today, and hopefully we'll hear back from you soon. And look forward to anyone who hasn't seen the film, just watch your local movie theaters, or actually sign up for Dan's email list, and you'll be the first to know. All right, Dan, thanks, and take care.
Thank you, Randall. Take care.
The new home for visionary positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
Understanding your soul's truth. Learn about the blueprint of your soul and understand the contract you made in this lifetime. Do you want to know how to manifest your soul's deepest desires and get answers to your most complicated questions? Tune into Soul Navigation with Meredith, world-renowned psychic life coach and professional astrologer. Broadcasting every Wednesday at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on the 7th Wave Network, Soul Navigation brings you a fusion of spiritualist, relationship specialists, psychic mediums, mystics, life coaches, past life regressionists, astrologers, and get real experts that provide a deeper understanding of yourself and your soul's sacred contract in this lifetime. Know yourself in the past, present, and the future. Soul Navigation with Meredith. The soul craves the truth and will settle for nothing less.
Create a life with growth, balance, abundant peace of mind, and joy. Tune in and call into Spirits Evolving with pragmatic psychic and certified hypnotherapist Lee Channing. By using the simple tools for growth offered by Lee, including intuition, color awareness, creative visualization, and more, build a stronger understanding of your own energy and offer clear, unencumbered energy to those with whom you share your life. Whether for an individual or a business, home environment, or your office, Lee evaluates and interacts with the energy at hand, providing an analysis of the problem and a description of the options available to move forward successfully and with grace. Spirits Evolving with Lee Channing broadcasts each Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern on the 7th Wave Network, your online community for positive change. Spirits Evolving, your guide toward a life filled with more balance, intention, and contentment.
Awakened media for a transforming world. Seventh Wave Network.
Well, we're here in the studio with Kevin Bernhardt, the screenwriter for Peaceful Warrior. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Randall.
Well, let's start off with a little bit about you, so our audience knows who we're talking to here. Now, you had a career in writing for both films and TV, so can you kind of go over what your career history has been in the motion picture business?
Well, I actually started as an actor when I couldn't get work as a writer and had contract roles and soaps, General Hospital and Dynasty, and was on TV for about 5 years. And then finally started selling screenplays and left that behind. And in the last, I'd say, 10 years, I've had, I think, 15, 16 that I worked on. Produced some TV, some film, and largely in the action genre, which makes Peaceful Warrior all the more interesting.
It was a change for the type of films that you were writing before, which were mostly like action films. Sort of a borderline on a little bit of the horror genre as well.
Right, right. It really, I just saw it as a great opportunity to be able to expand my horizons. And as you might imagine, working on the same sort of genre all the time, I think they help each other. You know, if you can get outside one genre into another, when you come back to the action, somehow it's allowed you to expand your mind a little.
Right, so how did you initially get connected to the project?
Well, the producers, Mark Amin at Sobini, Cammy Winnikoff there, I'd worked with them on a couple projects previous to that that had gotten made. One was, I believe, a sequel to Turbulence, and another was an action picture with Peter Weller and Daryl Hannah. And I found out that they had this book, the rights to this book, and I'd been a great fan for years and approached them about the possibility of writing it, and
they were receptive and probably dubious in the beginning because of my resume, but doing something very different for them. They'd see me in a very different light. But I came to them with a take that I think probably made the difference just because I hadn't written that sort of material before. It was a different take, and I think probably inevitably that's a large part of why it ended up getting made.
So we're talking about the book, for those of you who don't know, it's the book, Dan Millman wrote a book called The Way of the Peaceful Warrior, and Kevin's making reference to that. And so they had the rights to it, and you said, I like the book, and let me give it a shot.
Right. David Welch was the producer who had the book. He had had the foresight 15 years before to option it, and he had partnered with Mark being someone very, very good at getting films made, which is actually a lot rarer than people will generally find. But he partnered with him, and he'd been struggling to get it made for, I think, a dozen years previous, and saw Mark as a way to do it, and I'd had the relationship with Mark, so there you have it.
So were they planning to do anything with, were they thinking about it, and they were, you sort of hit them at the right time, or you sort of initiated the move towards getting this film made again?
Well, I think when you get involved with someone like Mark Amin, it becomes very active. He doesn't get involved unless he takes on very few projects, and the projects he does take on, he has a very high success ratio actually getting to film.
So now that you want to take a shot at the book as a writer, looking at the types of films that are out there in the genre, and there's not too many of them, it's getting to be a more popular genre. It's got many different names at this point. Some people call it sacred cinema, visionary cinema, spiritual cinema. The movie itself is billed as a fantasy drama, so this is sort of new ground for a major Hollywood film. So what was your thoughts on your approach to it? How did you want to be able to communicate the underlying themes in the book, which are sort of mystical and spiritual and so forth?
Well, I really felt that the mistakes, at least cinematically, I don't know that you can make mistakes on a spiritual level, but the mistakes, at least cinematically, were trying to take material like this and expect people to open their minds to something different. That's not generally what a moviegoer is looking for. If someone goes into a bookstore and they pick that book up and they're looking for that genre and they're looking for that sort of story, that's one thing. But if you, a moviegoer, you have to kind of try and tap into a story they can identify with, make it accessible, something they can relate to. And, you know, I just really felt like trying to, yes, keep the spirituality, but make it the medicine that goes down with the sugar that would be a story that people would be more apt to live, relate to through their own lives. So I went into the book and felt that even though the gymnastics was, to a large degree, very marginal, there's probably 6 or 7 pages that even deal with it in a 200-page novel, I felt that's what the story should be wrapped around, and it should sort of lure people into believing they were watching a film like Rocky or The Karate Kid or any other sports film. And once they were in it, then grab them enough with the spirituality that they wouldn't care about that anymore. And to me, that would be the success, getting to the end of the story and not caring if he wins, but just caring about who he's become as a result of the journey. So that was my take on it, and I think Victor Salvo stayed pretty true, the director stayed pretty true to that, and I hope it comes across that way.
Well, audiences seem to be responding very favorably. You've got a number of very well-known celebrities, individuals, writers, speakers, like Tony Robbins and Sting, and a lot of people who have on the website have responded very positively to the movie. So you definitely have touched the nerve with the content that you've put in it.
Well, thank you. I really, you know, I'm just real grateful to have been associated with people who not only got it from the beginning, but the artists who came after me in the form of the actors and the director and all the producers.
How many drafts did you go through to get it to the point where it kind of ended
up? Oh, boy, we went through probably a dozen drafts. Mark Amin and and Cami Winnikoff and Robin Shore, who was the head of development there, and David Welch, who has been the shepherd of this from the beginning, just were very active in trying different things and just constantly weighing out, you know, character versus plot while mixed in this, you know, spiritual world and how far to take the spirituality, because the book goes a lot further than the film did. But we felt like, again, just keeping it accessible, better to get a person who would never be exposed to this sort of thing interested in walking away from the film, wanting to read the book and get more, wanting to read other like-minded material and further themselves, rather than just hit them over the head with this avalanche of spirituality that's just going to be confusing and seem very foreign.
Did you talk to any professional athletes to get sight of the mindset that they go through in prepping for a major event?
I did speak to a few gymnasts because I felt like I should keep it very specific, and I felt like the people who competed on that level in any sport had to be of the same mindset, so I felt like I was killing two birds with one stone, so to speak.
In the transition from the development stage into production, and they were looking at a place to shoot it, did you actually note a place in the script where it would be located, or did they just decide on location when they went into production?
I know they had their heart set on Berkeley from the very beginning, this being to a large degree based on a true story. They really wanted to keep it as authentic as possible, and it did happen at Berkeley. And you know, traveling to Berkeley was a little more expensive than what they probably could have done elsewhere, but they wanted to keep it real, and you know, Berkeley's California, it's not like having to go to the Himalayas. So I was pretty impressed that David Welch, the producer especially, stood by that decision and felt it would lend to the, you know, truth ultimately.
Right. Did you come up with a lot of the other characters that are in the film? Because there's not too many characters in the book other than Socrates and Dan Millman's character itself. So,
yeah, I did. I felt, you know, his friendships outside Socrates. To me, Socrates had everything you needed. You know, it was sort of, the challenge was finding other parts of Dan, the lead's life, that Socrates' teachings and insights could reflect upon. In other words, I just try to create enough of the world outside Socrates, because there's certainly enough of that in the book to show how someone's life changes, how one's relationships change and friendships change, sometimes in the short run for the worse, before anything can get better. So rather than just talking about it, I felt it necessary to show it, and of course to show it you have to have the obvious friendships and not only the gymnastics but the relationships with the other gymnasts and the ladies, of course, being a college gymnast and all the rest. So yeah, we had to take it outside the gas station.
Going through the book, when you're basically structuring the story out, was there some things that you purposely left out, things that you felt wouldn't translate, that were too far out, that wouldn't work in the film?
Yeah, I think, you know, I ended the film probably two-thirds into the book. I definitely feel there's a sequel there, but I think the sequel is for those who like the film and, of course, want to broaden their minds a little more and be a little more receptive to abstract ideas. What I did was try to ground it in reality and really, to a large degree, show that, you know, you can create something in your life that's happier and better for yourself and people around you with what you have. You know, you don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to go to a monastery. You don't have to devote your life to an entirely different religion or spirituality. You can just make the most of what you're handed and be a lot happier for it. So I look for those things in the book. I look for and you know, there's less of that, obviously, than the spiritual, but I think it's a lot more relatable. So just things you could hold on to.
Do you think that audiences are becoming more receptive to movies like this with this kind of subject matter, which borders on the sort of mystical side of things of life? Do you think those type of films are becoming more in demand, or at least people are more open to them?
I think audiences are so frustrated with everything else and so bored with getting kind of the same rehashed material in so many other films that I think they are a lot more open-minded to this. I wish that the powers that be who control how many theaters this sort of film will see, or how much should be risked in print and advertising to let people know that this sort of material exists, I wish that they believed stronger that this would be something worthwhile, because I think Lionsgate tested it over the summer in 30 or 40 theaters, and it was bringing in $8,000 to $12,000 a theater screen over a weekend, which is unheard of when, you know, it's essentially based on an ad in the newspaper. So, you know, I think the audience is there. I just think it all comes down to proper handling.
What was the journey like for you to write a movie like this? Did it affect you? Did it change your perspective on things?
I think it's probably the first thing I ever wrote that I really felt like I was taking money I shouldn't be getting. You know, I really enjoyed it. It was really a learning experience. I mean, I read these sorts of books and have always been very, beyond curious, but very much a student of any theology or spirituality, very open-minded all the way around. So just to be paid to live this stuff every day was a great experience. I was really lucky to have that opportunity.
Did you weave some of your own personal experiences a little bit into the film?
To some degree. I just there's one particular scene that just comes to mind where they're being accosted by some unsavory characters intent on taking their wallets. And the book, I think Socrates actually gives him a beating, which he's quite able to do, being that he's a character who's learned every aspect of things. And I saw a better result than actually having him give the muggers everything, all the way down to his underwear, and completely throw them off balance, and in a sense teach Dan that way that you
don't have to meet violence with violence.
No, exactly. Sometimes you give people what they want, and they'll start questioning why they wanted it. You know, you really can, and it's all about other people. It's not just about yourself. I mean, and how you walk away from them is about yourself, because ultimately you would feel better changing someone for the good in the long run, a lot better than you do walking away having shown them that you can beat them up, you know. So there's a lot of things I've drawn from my own experiences, but spirituality is all Dan Millman. It's all in the book.
So you took a lot of the concepts and ideas and lines of dialogue that are really what I would call little gems of dialogue in the film. You took those directly from his book,
right? And I mean it's that's the most difficult thing when you're dealing with these sorts of gems. You know, in a film, you want to show it. You don't want to say it. So, to me, the challenge was always trying to find a way to show by example, not only example, but relatable example. You could watch that and say, yeah, that happened to me, and now I understand a little better why. Now I understand a little better how maybe I can feel better about that experience and better about myself after having lived it. And you know, just the gems, like living in the present, you know, and really trying. It sounds so simple, but you know, if you really can get to a point where you can do that on occasion, it's really freeing. There is a lot of truth to what's in that film and that book.
Yeah, there definitely is. When you started taking a look at when you finished the screenplay, were you satisfied with it personally, or did you felt that there still could be improvements made?
I'm still working on it. Still working on it. I don't think there's ever a screenplay that I don't just keep working on. Even after they've shot it, I'll be showing up the editing room for an idea how to change something without having to reshoot.
Were you in the editing room when they were cutting it to make
suggestions? No, I trust these guys implicitly. I'm never, I can always work on something more, which, you know, at some point you have to really say, okay, you can be happy without ever being happy, you know, and it was the right script for the time when they were shooting it for me, you know. Mm-hmm. That's where I was, and that's what it was. So, in that respect, I'm happy with it.
I want to ask you a question about the ending, because it kind of, I'm not going to spoil it for people, but just overall your thoughts on why you ended it the way you did when he goes back. How did you come to that kind of decision where it's sort of, he kind of almost questions his whole relationship with Socrates at the end of the film?
You know, I just felt like they have a saying in Buddhism that if you see your Buddha in the road, you should kill him. And to me, I just felt like it was very important to make it clear that it was about the message and not the messenger.
What tips would you have for other screenwriters who are going to be approaching ideas that are in the film, sort of the visionary and mystical aspects of storytelling? What advice would you give to them?
I would think it would be most important to find a way to root what you want to say in something, again, that's accessible, and even better if it's relevant, which I think Peaceful Warrior has both. Find a way to tell your story in a way that's not preaching to people. Instead, it's showing what your mission is rather than telling it. I mean, that's the hardest thing about these sorts of films. And if you can show it even more so in a way that is not necessarily magical. These magical films are okay, but to a large degree, if you can keep it to what's happening in someone's head, then the larger audience will relate to it, I think, because, you know, we all go through these things. We just don't understand what they are. And, you know, these experiences, these dreams, deja vu, and all these things that are so mystical and magical, but we take them for granted. Don't take those for granted. You know, really understand that that's where the magic is. You don't have to have someone who is, you know, in your story learning to fly, but you know, there's a lot more to be gained, and you can fly a lot higher in your head and find a lot more out of your real life that is much more magical than if you were actually able to do it, you know. So, you know, ground it, because I think that's what scares people away from this sort of film. They don't want to be preached to about a different religion, because they've had their own religion pounded into their head since before they can remember. So don't put a label on it, and ground it in something that is an experience that they might have and that they have experienced, rather than on something that's happening to someone else that will never happen to them. I'd say those are the most important things to remember when writing something of that genre.
Kevin, thanks for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me, Randall.
Yeah, what's up next for you? What are you working on currently?
Oh, we have a few in development. All back to the action genre. Action. One of them is an action horror crossover. It's an adaptation of the She comic book, which is a very popular female-driven comic book about an Asian girl, Japanese girl, from a long line of samurai who doesn't really want to be involved in that family anymore, and escapes in the United States. Of course, she finds out that, you know, it's going to come to her anyway, and fortunately, she has the ghosts of her grandparents to empower her. So you have, you know, half horror, half action in the old Chinese.
And I'm sure you'll be weaving some mystical ideas into that as well.
Oh, since, it's full of it, yeah. The other one I'm working on right now is for the Metropolis family, which is their Greek mergers and acquisitions family that has come to Hollywood and set up shop. And their first film is about the Greek Revolution in the early 1800s, driving the Ottoman Empire out of Greece, so that they can again have the democracy that they themselves invented previously. So that's a nice one.
Yeah, that sounds like a really interesting historical drama.
Yeah, a nice piece.
Yeah. Well, we'll look for those, definitely. Well, Kevin, thanks again. I really appreciate your time. And everyone, if you're interested, in, of course, in seeing the film, it's still out in theaters, Peaceful Warrior. And you can go to the Peaceful Warrior Movie website. It's thepeacefulwarriormovie.com. Is the main website for the motion picture. All right, well, Kevin, thanks again, and we'll be hopefully talking with you again sometime in the future.
Thank you, Randall. I hope so.
Well, that's a wrap for our show for this week. Join us again next week as we showcase the very best in movie entertainment that inspires us towards positive change and honors the belief that simple choices can change the world. I'd like to thank our engineers, Ruben Columb and Ryan Treasure, who helped put the show together, and especially to Tom Kirsch and the rest of the Catfish Groove Farm Band for our theme music. You can hear more of their really cool tunes at catfishgroovefarm.com. And of course, you can find out more on the internet about Spirit of Film Conversations and the movies we talk about each week by going to my website at spiritoffilm.net. And of course, please tell your friends about where to find our program right here on SeventhWaveNetwork.com. And remember, you are the writer, producer, director, and star of your own movie that's called Your Life. So make it a blockbuster, and it'll be a classic. Until next time, I'm Randall Libero for Spirit of Film Conversations. We'll see you next week.